Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMO Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Jeff Lackey. Jeff is the CEO of JKL Advisors, a consultancy whose purpose is to help grow small, medium, and large corporations that need to unlock their growth strategy with people. Jeff has recently served as the Vice President of Talent Acquisition for CVS Health, where he led the award-winning global talent acquisition team for a $300 billion organization with over 300,000 employees. He led that for 7 years, and he has also led talent acquisition for other globally recognized brands such as Rolls-Royce, First Energy, and Corning Incorporated. Over his 25-year career, he has led teams that have hired over 1 million people in 70 countries and across 8 industries. He also has a podcast entitled Growing Your Business with People, where he interviews leaders. And we're looking forward to today's conversation with Jeff. Well, we go back a number of years when we first met, and definitely would love our audience to hear a little bit of your story and a little bit of your career trajectory.
Well, just settle in, you know, get in a comfortable chair. We'll be done in a couple, 2-3 hours, I'm sure. No problem. We'll do the abridged version. How about that? Okay. So, the high level is just very simple. My name's Jeff Lackey. I've had the pleasure of being able to lead talent acquisition and HR teams over a course of over 25 years now in different capacities, with businesses ranging from as small as $100 million in revenue all the way up to $320 billion in revenue from my little solopreneur organization, which is me and like three fractional folks, to organizations in excess of 300,000 employees, right? So I've been across 8 different industries and worked across 70 implementing talent acquisition in 70 different countries. Had the joy, actually it's the reason for some of the white hair on my head, of implementing probably well over 40 different technologies in the course of my career. Because I am certain that there's always a better way to do things. And it's either people or process or technology or usually all three of the above to be able to solve most of the things that you want to solve. So with myself, I've worked as Vice President of Talent Acquisition for CVS, worked for organizations like Rolls-Royce, Corning Incorporated, First Energy. So I've done anywhere from nuclear power plants to aircraft to pharmaceuticals to healthcare and high tech and everything in between. So myself and my wife have raised 4 children, 2 of which are off the payroll, nice. 2 of which are still on the payroll. So I still am living in what I'd refer to as not complete poverty. It's just a virtual poverty. You know, I everything that I owe is because of them.
There you go.
Yeah. And we have a golden doodle and 2 cats. We have the house is quieter, but the cats and the golden doodle keep us busy. Yeah.
Well, and you said, yeah, white hair, it's platinum. I've learned that it's, platinum is a lot better than gray or white. So
people pay a lot of money for this color. That's what I hear.
That's true. So tell me a little bit, Jeff, just if you were to spin back time, go back to that time when you had darker hair at 22, what would you tell yourself as some advice for the road?
The biggest thing that I think I've learned over time is something that I've grown appreciation for is to be a learn-it-all, not a know-it-all. Don't try and know everything. Try to learn as much as you can. And the second thing is make sure that you appreciate everybody along the way and build as many bridges as you possibly can, working very hard to burn as few as you possibly can. There are bridges worth burning, but those are very rare and very thoughtful occasions. And then the last thing I'd say is make sure that you put faith above everything else. You know, put your faith in God and put your faith that he's going to provide and give yourself the peace and the joy that you can have, knowing that, like, you might be doing all the doing, but the results are ultimately going to be his. And so so knowing those things, I would have come a longer way faster had I actually done those things. Unfortunately, I had to learn all of them through the what do they call it? The school of hard knocks, right?
Sure. So we've talked before, and I think just a lot of our audience are first-time leaders or first-time CEOs. And sure. So they're trying to figure out the leadership thing, which sometimes you get mentors that help you along the way. And mm-hmm. sometimes it's intentional or unintentional. But talk a little bit about that. Just some people that have been in your life that have helped mentor you along the journey and the importance of that for those listening.
Yeah, I do have some mentors that I've had the pleasure of working with. But unfortunately, I have what I call the anti-mentors, probably more of those than I have mentors in my life, the people who showed me exactly what not to do and things I didn't want to do as a leader. And I think you can learn one of the people I worked with, Deborah Cunningham at First Energy, she used to say, grow where you're planted, right? Learn from whatever circumstance and everything that you're surrounded and grow as big as you can wherever you're planted. And then eventually you're going to replant yourself. You know, you're going to have to find a new place that has a bigger pot or a bigger space to be able to grow and spread yourself out. Then that's fine. But grow as fast and as far as you can where you are. And that's important. And then the other thing is that as leaders, just understand, I think Bob Teede would tell you, he's the author of with Dr. Marquardt of Leading with Questions, is really, you know, be curious as a leader, especially when things are hard, especially when things are bad. Like, you want to go way down on the music on that mood elevator and be like accusatory, or, you know, who did that, or who screwed this up, or who, you know, whose fault is this? Like, you might be inclined to say those things, but, like, as they might call it, you know, check yourself before you wreck yourself, right? You know, just bite your tongue, get yourself back into a place where you're curious, you know, get out of the blaming, get out of the anger or frustration that you're feeling. Cause what you're feeling is you're feeling embarrassment because you thought that you were going to achieve something that you're not, obviously that's in threat. You might be in a position where maybe even the things that you hold most valuable are at risk. Like, you know, understand your emotions and understand where they're coming from. Evaluate them and don't go pointing the finger at anybody, because the danger is, and they always tell you this, every time you point the finger, three more pointing back at you. Understand that, like, that's not going to help you, and it's certainly not going to help them. And that's not going to help you come to get the thing you need to most right in those moments is for your team to come together and have a breakthrough moment, or be able to come up with ideas to help get you out of whatever ditch you're in. And the last thing you can afford to do is start alienating them and upsetting them and making them, you know, close up and think very fixed. You need them all to be growth minded. So you have to resist every temptation to come off as harsh. Now, that being said, you should be transparent as a leader. In those moments when things are bad, you need to be frank with them and have that moment of saying, yeah, we're in a really bad spot. But describe the spot. Don't, you know, attack the problem, not the person. Describe the issues that you're having and the problems that, and possibly even how that risk is affecting you personally. Like, those are real moments. Don't waste those moments. They're inspiring moments for your team. But then at the same time, give them the space to say, yeah, I'm going to need your help to help me figure out how to get out of this, because I don't have the answer. Not by myself, I don't. You know, how can we work together to figure this out? That is, if I could go back in time to moments where where I feel like I look back and I say, oh, I'm cringing thinking of myself in that moment. It's those moments that I just described where I did not do that, where I was pointing the finger, I was angry, or I was upset with folks, and I didn't get what I could have gotten out of that situation. I missed that opportunity, but I'm grateful that I didn't stay there, and I learned hard way how not to remain in those moments, and how to eventually let others help pull me out of the ditch. Yeah, somebody told me, they said once, he goes, if you're stuck in the ditch, do you call yourself? Yeah, and I said, no, why would I do that? Okay, so why are you calling yourself now? Right? You're in business trouble. Why are you calling yourself? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to call somebody to help. Yeah, who's there to help? Your team. Or you might help, you might have stakeholders. You might even call your customers, suppliers. Call other people. Don't just call yourself. That's the worst thing you can do if you're stuck in the ditch is call yourself.
Yeah. Well, if thinking about, you know, that whole thing about when you're first tapped on the shoulder to be a leader, and think back to that time when you were identified as somebody who had leadership ability, and sometimes people that get tapped on the shoulder are great individual contributors, and then they get put in a leadership position and they're in trouble and floundering. But talk about that kind of, what do you wish you would have known earlier before you were tapped on the shoulder for that first role?
The power of listening. So one of my first big roles was at Corning Incorporated. I was put in charge of 100 people. The person who is in charge of me actually allowed me to have 100 direct reports, which is the silliest thing known to man. I mean, come on, really? Unless you're in a customer call center, that, or maybe even nursing, that's not realistic. But yeah, that's just silly. But I had 100 recruiters and coordinators all reporting into me. So I was like, okay, what do I do with all this? And I'd gone from a staff of like 8 people to like 100. Like overnight, new job, new company, new everything. And I'm just like, boom. And we were growing so fast that I would literally have presidents of acquired divisions calling me up before the head of HR could let me know that we've acquired this company and that they would be calling me and saying, hey, I need some recruiting services from you. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, sure, no problem. Spell your name again. Yeah. So I'm in this terrible position where I'm trying to do all things. And I was convinced at that point that I knew it all. Like if it needed figured out, I could figure it out. If there is a question, I could have an answer. I could get to an answer. Right. And nobody's gonna, and even if I didn't have the answer, I could work anybody in the table in terms of finding that answer, developing that thing. I was sure of it. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I could. I would work myself into an early grave, but I could do some of these things. But eventually it was going to collapse like a house of cards. So I got feedback from Constance Thompson. Constance is on my team. She's now executive in HR and very successful individual. But she goes, having you like a leader is like having a brick wall. I don't feel listened to. I don't feel appreciated. I don't, like, all I get is basically told how I need to do my job better or what else I need to do. Mm. And so I talked with my boss and talked to some folks, and I went into, I had a series of management training and some, because I've never had any management training except for B school and, I know like leadership training, right? Well, one of the first ones was hosted and is at Corning, and it was on the reflective listening. 2 days on how to listen. Now you think, really? Do you really need 2 full days to learn how to listen? And I'll be honest with you, you probably could have given them 2 weeks and it still could have been not enough if you really wanted to, because the art of listening is way more sophisticated if you really understand what it means. I get in there. I get in this class and I realize just how my thoughts were trampling my, like I didn't stop thinking. I never stopped to listen. I just was like, I was like integrating on the fly, taking it all in, thinking I was like working the stock market floor. You know, I was trading in the moment, everything. And the trick was empty that brain of yours. Take it all in and then play it back just the way you heard it until you can hear an absolute yes from that person saying, yeah, you get it. You understand what I just said. I said, the trick of that is twofold. One, it makes the person who's speaking feel appreciated, which is super important. But the second part, and this is a trick that most leaders don't appreciate till they're later on, is that they're going to learn about these things. You know, they're referred to as black swans. They're things that you, as the leader or the questioner or the repeater, in this place, the listener, needs, but you don't know the other person has this information. The person who has the information has it, but doesn't know that you need it. Right?
Sure.
But in the unpacking of a story, typically people say top layer first. If you're listening, they'll go down a layer. If you stay listening, they'll go a third layer. And maybe by the fourth layer, they actually tell you the stuff you actually need to know. Right? In one case, it was unintentional. I was going through a CVS. This is before I was a CVS. I was in Rolls Royce at the time, but I was going through CVS. I go up to this cashier. And I'm talking to him and I said, oh, hey, you know, how are you doing today? Oh, pretty good. Huh? Snowing out there. Yeah, it's pretty snowing. It's like the blizzard of 78 out there. I said, blizzard of 78? Where were you in the blizzard of 78? And he goes, oh, blizzard of 78. I was in Ohio. Ohio. I was from Ohio. Where in Ohio? Oh, I was in this part of Ohio. Blah, blah, blah. I still got family there. You got family there? Yeah, I still got family. I got my niece who works there. She works in a high school as a teacher. Oh, she works as a high school teacher. Yeah, she works as a high school teacher. She's been there some about 25 years or so, and she teaches trigonometry in this school called Cloverleaf. Now, back then, she was my trigonometry teacher in her first year, his niece. In the course of literally less than 5 minutes, I'd gone from meeting a complete stranger talking about the weather to learning that his niece was my trigonometry teacher. You know.
That's very cool.
In a school that was literally one state over from where I'm at. Now, does that actually matter in the big scheme of things? It makes for a heck of a story, right? But imagine as a leader what you might get if your folks started telling you the things that you need to hear and not just the stuff that you want to hear.
Yeah, that's a great lesson. I think most of the time we're all thinking of the next thing we're going to say versus listening. And I think I've been guilty of that in this podcast, I'm sure at times. And I actually listened to one back a while back and somebody was trying to give me some more information and I moved to the next question and that happens. So I think we're all guilty of that. Just ask your spouses.
We are guilty of that. We are guilty of the fact that we get caught up in our own mind. Right. And we forget that there's actually somebody sharing with us on the other end and that stuff that they're sharing is really fascinating once you go beyond the superficial. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I've heard this of and I've experienced this when people give their undivided attention to you. You think they're so interesting, but what they were doing is drawing out what you want to say, which doesn't happen very often. So it's like that's kind of the common thread. And, you know, people that are good listeners are more interesting than those that kind of are thinking about the next thing. Yeah.
Yeah, because they talk about the most important thing that you want to talk about, which is yourself.
Right. That's true. So as you're leading teams and you've been a part of several companies that have developed on larger scales of building teams, but what are some things that you think commonly leaders miss as they're evaluating talent and their own team as well as people that they're hiring?
Yeah. Well, within talent acquisition, I always said that my team was in charge of recruiting for organizations. So I would tell people, I said, the talent acquisition, your team is, we help our leaders hire great people. So really clear and clear on the purpose. What is your purpose in this organization, within this function, right? And understanding, you know, in CVSL, for example, our purpose as an organization was helping people on their path to better health, right? So we understood as an organization, we're helping people on the path to better health within my function, within my talent acquisition. We were helping our leaders hire great people, right? And so we could understand the clear connection between hiring the great people and helping people on the path to better health. And we made that connection routinely, right? So the first thing is that if you want to hire somebody, make sure they resonate with your purpose, with why they have to be there. Because if they don't resonate now, they are never going to resonate, right? This is the honeymoon phase, right? This is the time to connect. Like if you don't connect, move on, right? You know, the purpose is the central feature. The second is, resonating with the purpose and then reflecting your values or the behaviors that you feel are really important, right? If you have certain types of behaviors that your organization not only aspires to, but tries to live according to, no organization's perfect. If you find a perfect organization, I tell you run, because quite frankly, they're not being honest with you, right? But if they are attempting, if they understand where they want to be and they're making concerted effort, it's top of mind, it's something that they want to aspire to and are trying to do. Those are some of their values, right? Those are behaviors reflected in their values. If you have people that are if that organization or that person seems to reflect the values and you also talk about the values and they seem to say, yeah, that feels a lot like what would resonate with me. Okay, so you have what I talk to my talent acquisition team is, we were the curators of the culture because we first and foremost found people who resonated with the purpose and reflected the values. Before we get into skills, before we get into everything else, now obviously we've read the resume. We're not going to look for a janitor for the chief scientific officer, right? Or something like that, right? We understand that the person fits within the general parameters, but this is our first conversation. We're going to say, let's step back and I want to get to know you on a more personal level as what are the things that resonate with you? What are the things that are important to you? And then let's go move from there into the skills, into the competencies, into all those areas, because those are going to be super important for the success of the job, for the here and now job. But those first ones are going to be important not only for success of here and now, but also for the future of that person, because they're going to stay longer, they're going to be more successful, and they're going to have a bigger impact if they resonate with the purpose and reflect the values. So we start there. And that's why I call them curators of the culture, because that's what talent acquisition has the capability of being, especially if they partner with the leaders to do that.
Yeah, I think that's something that most teams miss as they're hiring, because they're so focused on, can you do the job versus are you aligned with what we're all about? And I was just talking to a board this morning, and they're looking to replace a leader that's been leading them successfully for 20 some years. And I said, you know, the thing is, you can bring in somebody that has the right skill set, but if they're not aligned to your mission and what you're about, that's not going to be success. And I think that's a great, great thought. And I think that's something that most organizations don't do well.
It takes effort, and it takes, what were we talking about before? Listening. Yes. Because if you're going to go into that, you have to listen intently to what the person's, not just what they're saying on the superficial, because that a lot of people are like, well, how do you know if they resonate with your purpose? Well, you talk about the purpose. You talk about examples. You give examples. You ask them to share examples. But then you reflect and allow them to go one level deeper and one level deeper and then one level deeper. When we were in the middle of our quit smoking campaign at CVS, one of the things I'd look for in organizations is ones that reflect my, I resonate with the purpose and reflect the values. And I had more than 14 people I met with, which, by the way, I don't recommend for any positions, but for executive positions, there tends to be a lot. 14 is not the max. I did do 17 interviews at one point in time, but it's up there. It's up in the top five. But what I'll tell you is this. To a person, they all talked about their purpose and their values, and they gave specific personal examples where that meant something. And many of them talked about the fact that they had a family member die of smoking, that they actually battled smoking and the addiction that comes with it, that they suffered the effects of being a child of secondhand smoke. They felt the purpose of, hey, I want to be a part of a healthcare company who's making a bet that's saying, we're going to set aside $2 billion, with a B, dollars worth of revenue to be able to live our purpose, because our purpose is more important than that $2 billion worth of revenue. I'm not sure that I know another organization that's taken that big of a gamble. Now, it paid off, don't get me wrong. But there was no assurances that that gamble would pay off. There was, it was so unprecedented. It was discussed for a long period of time at the board level and at the C-suite level before that was pulled. But when it got pulled, it was what I'd call a thought processed but heart driven decision. It was something that was true to the core of the values of that leadership team and that board to say, that is something we believe in. We're willing to put a stake in it. And at this point in time, gulp, you know, we're putting the flag on the ground. And I'm sure that it was not done with anything, but, you know, with a lot of trepidation, but with confidence. I mean, they did decide to do a big marketing. I remember the humongous cigarettes getting crushed, the virtual cigarettes getting crushed over and over. Like, the marketing, Helena Folks, who was on my show, was big part of that marketing campaign, led it, like, is remarkable. But it was about the heart. The reason, and literally there, you could not find the day that they went live with it, because it went across 10,000 stores simultaneously. You could not find a cigarette in any one of those stores. So one day they sold cigarettes, the next day, not in 10,000 stores, you could not find a single cigarette. And if you don't appreciate how difficult that is, I do, because I've tried to run ad campaigns in 10,000 stores and trying to get managers just to put up the little stickies on their window. Not easy, by the way. Not easy. Yeah.
So every leader is a learner, or should be if they're not. Sure. What books do you recommend to leaders that have been impactful for you?
Sure. I have a number of them. Well, you know, from my faith perspective, I do spend a lot of time in the Bible. So, because there are between Proverbs and Psalms and in many different areas of the Bible, there's exceptional knowledge and wisdom that you can glean. I also love the book, The Trillion Dollar Coach. So, The Trillion Dollar Coach is a conversation it was written in memoriam for a person who passed away, Bill Campbell, and he was actually the coach to Steve Jobs and coach to the founders of Google and coach to all these other people. And he essentially was a football coach turned business executive who was probably the most uncharacteristic, you know, Silicon Valley executive. You know, it's like throwing your classic Midwesterner in the middle of Silicon Valley, and put him, you know, football coach Midwesterner, and put him there. But the folks at Google and many others helped write this book afterwards because they didn't want his lessons on leadership lost, and they were so important to them. So phenomenal. It's one of the only books I've ever read where I actually felt a tear in the corner of my eye at the end of it, because I knew that I'd never be able to talk to or speak to Bill Campbell. And that was impactful. Like, I actually felt bad that I didn't get a chance to ever talk with him, but I felt like I got something from the book. Another one which I think is really, really phenomenal. And it's not for the reasons that I'll tell is never split the difference. Now it's a negotiate like your life depends on it. It's written by a hostage, head of hostage negotiation by the FBI, former head of hostage negotiation FBI. And he'd rewritten the book on essentially negotiations for the FBI. The issue that I say is, like, people look at Never Split the Difference as though it is a guide to negotiations. And while its front cover, what's on the tin purpose is absolutely that. I would tell you that it's actually really about communication, about relationships, and about teamwork. Because this is a way that you can actually build listening, empathizing, but also not having to give up ground just to appease, but rather coming to an agreement that allows you to obviously see it as successful, but ultimately is a creation of success. Like, if I'm in a hostage negotiation, they have 10 people. I don't think it's a success if I say, you go ahead and kill 5. I'll take the other 5. We'll kind of just split the difference. We cool? Like, you're coming out of there. Like, and then I'll let you go. Like you kind of go your own way. I'll go mine. And we'll, like, you give me 5. We're good. Right? That'll never happen. That couldn't happen. That hostage negotiator is in an unwinnable position in theory, in the sense that they have to get the hostages out, and they also have to get the hostage takers out without them dying either, so that they can face justice. Like, what person on earth is, like, a rational person is going to not only give up all their leverage, but also then turn themselves in for punishment for no apparent value, right? And he goes through all that. But I think that's a phenomenal one. Another one is a new one that I'm working through, is leading with questions, which I do and enjoy. And that's by Bob Teede and Dr. Markert. And it's, while I'd say that its references are almost as good as the book, because it refers to other books and other sources for where questions. And as a leader, other than listening, which should be your primary source of leadership, your second best is your questions. What kind of questions do you ask? How do you ask them? And how do you lead in such a way that allows those around you to rise, right, and inflate? You know, it's the helium, right? You got to be pumping them full of helium. And helium isn't coming with just compliments. That compliment helium, that thing that flows right out the window quick. You need the helium that you really want to give is lasting helium, which is actually having them put their finger and thumbprints all over the problem, owning it, and helping you own a solution that'll work. Yeah. Those are a few.
Yeah. No, that's some good ones too. And a couple of those we've not had on our list from other guests. So that's great. So outside of work, what do you do to recharge?
So I do a lot of things. I love travel. So I spend a fair amount of time in other countries. I spend going over different parts of Europe. My son's actually heading to Asia, which I'm super jealous of, that I'm not going to be able to join him for his Asian trip. He's going to hang out with Ed Lim, a friend of mine who's ran all of Singapore for all of Asia for Rolls-Royce recruiting for me. I love to travel, and I enjoy, I have some woodworking stuff in my basement, so I do some woodworking, and I just like to study different things that require me to expand my mind. This, if I've never done it before, then it's likely that I'm willing to try it. I may not make it a permanent part of my repertoire of things that I do, but I will, I learn it in spades, you know. So I've done farming. I've done landscaping. I've built decks and patios and done all sorts of things. I've if you've named it, there's probably a 70 to 80% chance that I've done it. As long as it doesn't involve extreme heights or me hanging from places, then it's probably on my list. So, yeah.
So what parting advice would you give our listeners as they're endeavoring to be better leaders?
Listen to and learn. Just listen and learn. You will be amazed at how much you can learn if you just sit there and listen, and you make sure that the person that you're talking to, that person knows that you're listening, because you're feeding it back to them. You're like, I heard you. So, like, for example, right now, your question to me, like, what advice do you have for our listeners? What powerful thing, what more powerful thing could you have than the ability to give advice to however millions or billions of people who are listening to you every day, right? You know, every one of these podcasts, right? I have the ability and the privilege to be able to share that. And I'd tell you, just listen to one another. And then the last thing I'd say is remember this, and this is something that I believe very, very frankly, is that business is really built, you know, I'm a Christian. I believe it's built on God's principles. And the main principle that it is built on is the second commandment. And you say, well, what's the second commandment of the 10? I said, no, of the ones that Jesus gave. He gave first is love God with your whole heart and your whole mind and your whole soul and all your strength. Second one was love your neighbor as yourself. If we can conduct business in a way that actually loves our neighbor, business will be successful. Now, it may or may not always have the monetary success that we would like. We might not be the next Elon Musk, right? Or Bill Gates, or you name some billionaire out there. But I guess the fact is that with rare exception, I don't know a lot of people who actually desire to be Elon or Bill. But I actually know a lot of people that would like to actually feel as though the work they do is good work. The business that they're involved in is respected and valued. And then it's successful in the sense that they feel proud of the work that the business does, and they can claim it. They can claim, yes, actually, I'm a part of this business. I'm proud to say that my name is associated with this organization. Yeah. If you can do that, you're feeling pretty good. And so I tell folks, you know, think of business as a second commandment. Think of it in that perspective. And while not everybody else may think of it in that way, and so you have to be wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove, you want to be, you know, thoughtful in making sure that your part, your contribution is fulfilling that second commandment. So that's my advice.
Yeah, great advice. So how would somebody learn more about you? You've got a podcast and your work. How would they learn more about that?
Oh, sure. So my work is an organization called JKL Advisors LLC, but I'm known more by Growing Your Business with People, a podcast dedicated to leaders who want to grow their business by investing in their biggest and most important investment, which is people. And if you want to break it down, it's essentially helping leaders lead better. So I have CEOs of Fortune 10 and Fortune 100 organizations. I have best-selling authors. I have all sorts of people from every walk of life, anywhere from a leadership therapist to you know, people who are founders of some of the biggest technology in the world right now, and even an author, the first author of the intersection of AI and healthcare in the world. So we've had technologists, thought leaders, you know, senior executives, chief HR officers talking about what is that intersectionality, you know, where is people the part that helps a business to grow. So you can find me at www.gybwp.com. You're like, well, GYBWP, what does that mean? Growing Your Business with People. right? So you can also spell it all out, but it takes a lot more clips to get through growingyourbusinesswithpeople.com. So we thought it'd give you a nice little a break. So thank you very much, Mark, for having me on the show.
Well, I wish you continued success with all you're doing and appreciate sharing some of your insights today.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.